Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's get started.
Straight from New York, yo, yo, this handsome man. Yo, yo, now, fucker.
Tune in now, Joe the Funk Master. Watch your grill, yoga, knock that cold faster. Talking shit, now we talking facts. With the mountain off the back, you in trouble, came to burst a bubble. I don't shelter punches, they find home on your mind about a double. This the weekly scraps. You don't need a map, GPS, I'm right here to lead a dash. The world doesn't know it needs, but I grow disease. Planet, fuck a name and a fame. Only legacy remains. Remember the name, Aljamain Sterling.
It ain't shit, it ain't shit.
Motherfucker.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Weekly Scraps, episode 124. UFC 261. Crazy event, crazy card, and guess what? The fans are back. Boo! Woo! Woo! Let's go! You woo my way! Woo my way! Crazy. It was a great event, and from top to bottom, I want to say all the fights were great, except for the one particular incident. Obviously, we know our guy Chris Weidman, so shout out to him, and hopefully he makes a speedy recovery. We know he was in the hospital bed already, getting everything taken care of. Marivi, his wife, posted a picture and, you know, him giving the thumbs up that everything's okay. Obviously, it's not okay, but everything's okay in the sense that he will get better and he's being taken care of and attended to. So I'm hoping he can get back to whatever we can call normal. And that'd be great if we could get back to a baseline of him being able to compete, kind of thing. So it remains to be seen. Depends on the recovery. You know, it was cool that Anderson Silva actually said something and gave a few words of encouragement to his former nemesis in Chris Weidman, who also had the same incident happen to him. In case you guys forgot, it wasn't that long ago. Chris actually checked the kick, and that's what happened. For this one, it was kind of weird. It's like Chris kicked at the knee, and it just happened that it's hard to say, like, Uriah turned and did, like, I'm gonna check this, or lean into it, say I'm gonna check this. It's kind of one of those things. He kind of just braced, and Chris just kicked at the right spot, and it was like the perfect storm. Such a weird freaky incident, man. And the first kick, like 17 seconds into at that, damn, I don't know. And you know what the sad thing is? This was the best shape that Chris has been in a very long time. Like I was saying on last week's episode, he's back to the old ways of his training habits, getting back to that grind, putting in that extra work, which is what got him to the top in the first place, because he outworked everybody bar none, man. That was just the Chris Weidman of old. And, you know, we always say when you get a little bit comfortable, get to the top. When you get to the top, it's easier to get comfortable because of all the things that you now have. It's like you lose a little bit of that burning desire. To want to compete and get to the highest levels and climb the highest mountains, kind of thing. So it is what it is, man. I don't want to harp on that too much, because it's just not something to harp on, you know, and just brings back a bad taste in your mouth, kind of thing, you know. So let's move on. So far, so good with my recovery. No pain. I shadow boxed yesterday, and Pumi, who's here, aka Turbo, CFFC flyweight champion of the world. So I was like, yo, I'm hitting the dummy, and I'm just playing around. I'm like, look at Pumi. He's, you know, I'm like, slow down so I can hold the pads. I'm not holding the pads. Marab is holding the pads for him. But I'm like, just chirping, like, slow down so he can hold the pads for you. And then he's going over there, hitting the pads, like, blazing speed. And then I'm over here on the dummy bag, on the Everlast dummy bag, just like, acha, chopping at it or whatever. And I go, Mizuki, this is Pumi. He needs to slow down. This is me. This is all I can do. And then Pumi's like, yo, bro, that doesn't hurt you at all. I'm like, nah. He's like, dude, you just had neck surgery. I'm like, yeah, I know. It's kind of weird, right? It's like, I feel like I shouldn't be able to do all the things that I have been doing. Even earlier that day, I was out and about shopping, picking up a bag of groceries, detergents, which aren't light. And he's like, dude, you've been doing a lot today. I was like, yeah, I probably should chill out a little bit now. And then I was like, but look, I was like, I feel like I could punch as long as it's straight punches, as long as I'm not coming over the top and doing anything crazy or really winding up and twisting and rotating my head really hard or really fast. I think I should be okay. So then he holds his hands for me and I go, one, two, and I got a little clip of it. It's like 40 seconds. And I'm like, yo, this is weird. I'm like, he's like, you can't post that. But I'm like, I literally just had neck surgery. What are people gonna say? I'm faking it. I was like, I really do think I might be like Wolverine or something, because this healing process has been absolutely insane. And I got to start asking other people, how quickly were they able to get back to do like basic activities? And obviously, I'm just touching his hands. I'm not cracking, but I'm like, boom, boom, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, uppercut, 4, pull back, slip, slip, and I go weave, weave. Well, actually, the other way, weave the left hook and then weave the right hook, pivot out, and then I'm back in my stance and I'm moving. I'm like, this is actually bizarre and a little freaky that I could be doing all this already. And I think it's just a good sign for good things to come. So, like I said, man, I'll see you guys back in October, November. We're going to get after it. I'm not going to rush the process. Obviously, I'm going to be smart, guys. I'm going to be smart, people. I'm going to be smart. But this is huge. all right, so let's get into it. First fight, Kamaru Usman versus Jorge Masvidal. Ridiculous aftermath, or should I say conclusion? And then the aftermath with the press conference and everything. But seeing the conclusion of how it ended, it's just like, this is why I don't bet against Usman anymore, man. Because he removes all doubt. And mind you, I've liked Usman since The Ultimate Fighter. I thought he was a tough dude, a grinder, good wrestler, had a lot of potential once he could learn how to like really implement his power in the striking department. A couple fights later, he beat up a jiu-jitsu guy who had no hands and a couple other things, knocked out those guys. Then he fought Kobe Covington, who doesn't really have hands either, but he's a dog and he's in there in the trenches and he's willing to put his face on the line and get hit just to get you down and just to stay in your face and get you tired and out-cardio you. That's Kobe Covington-esque. So seeing those fights and then leading all the way up to his run to becoming a champion, beating Tyron Woodley the way he did it, I'm like, I don't know if I'm sold on him yet in terms of him being the dominant guy that he is today. But one thing I did say, I was like, he gets better every single fight, but I just wasn't sure if it was enough. I was like, Woodley, is they both grapplers? Woodley's a better grappler in the terms of the accolades, I guess, D1, D2. I mean, I wrestle D3, people shit on me, and I think my wrestling is a lot better than a lot of D1 guys. Maybe not all the All-Americans out there, but I do think I can compete 100%. So I don't put too much stock in that, but I'm going on paper. It's not like they're both jiu-jitsu guys. I would say maybe Woodley does more BJJ than Usman because at least he talks about it more, posts about it more, got his black belt. I don't think Usman even really does jiu-jitsu at all. Maybe it's like the very basic minimum. Kind of like Justin Gaethje, and now that they're training together, it's kind of like, it's just one of those things, you know? So I looked at that, I just felt like Woodley would best him in a close competition, the same way he kind of, you know, stayed on his bike against Wonderboy, stayed on his bike against Damian Maia, just being smarter and winning on the criteria of a fight, you know, taking less damage, hitting when you can hit, clinching you up, slowing down the fight, and just being safe in all aspects of the game. And Usman did that to him. So fast forward, just not to make this super long-winded, but when I see this and I see the development of him, and then I see how Gilbert Burns goes on the run, knocking guys out, putting guys away, and then he goes on and then does that to Gilbert Burns, a guy he trained with, who knows his ins and outs secrets, who Usman has said has gotten the better of him in training, and that's how their sparring sessions go. He starts off strong, he comes back in battles, and he just knows how to win. He's just that dude. And then to see this one, they have the rematch. And like he said, he wants to put the nail in the coffin. And when I say he put the nail in the coffin, sha-bang, that shit ain't never opening against Usman, I should say. You know, I think 2-0. And like Masvidal said, you know, he can't see himself going 1-1 with him. He run back the trilogy. But now we have 2-0. It's kind of like that DC, John Jones things. Like, the third one would be fun, but it's like in a different weight class. It is going to be fun, but it takes away from a rivalry if one guy has pretty much all the wins. And you can say Chuck Liddell versus Tito Ortiz, but he fought him when Chuck Liddell was way past where he should be fighting and competing, you know, for that third one when he knocked him out. It's kind of like, honestly, a lot of people could probably knock him out at this point in his career, or the end of his career, outside of his career. You know, it's not even in his career anymore. It's outside of his career. So going back, like I said, man, Usman, beautiful body work, the jab, getting the early takedown, but Masvidal getting back up in the first round and making it interesting. And I'm like, okay, we got ourselves a fight on our hands, because if he can get up and then give him some resistance and not let him coast the entire each round and he gets a takedown, because I thought it was going to go 5 rounds. If you told me it was going to be a knockout from Usman, what? Masvidal? The guy with the shoulder roll and all that, who's slipping and weaving, blowing kisses at you while you're missing the punches, because his fight IQ defense is just super sharp. And one thing I like to say, the art of deception, making him think about the takedown constantly, and then boom, comes back with the striking. That long jab that he's paying dividends to the body, get him to think low, and then he goes and comes up with that three. It's kind of like a three, but it's almost like a grabbing, like a hooking, like a swiping hook. So he swipes with that three, grabs the hand, and Masvidal does a beautiful job always with that check hook. He stays tall. His chin is up a lot in a lot of his fights, but he's so quick with that hands where he's here, that Masvidal-esque, where he's just like, boom, boom, those fakes, and he's touching it, pop, 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 and he throws that hook right over the top. He tried to throw the hook, but Usman's right hand beats him down the middle like a freaking, I don't even know, like a ball out of a shotgun cannon, and cracks him, puts him down, and follows up, and he said it was super necessary for those follow-up strikes, and it's just hilarious to see, like, the gamesmanship between both these guys. But yeah, man, he got the win. And like I said, in terms of GSP's run, so let me clarify. GSP is the greatest welterweight of all time, yes, of his era. But the greatest welterweight of all time of this new era, you got to say is Usman. And I think he's a couple wins away. You could say GSP defended it way more times. Yes, yes. But if Usman could keep doing this to guys of newer, new school caliber, come on, man. You can say, oh, he beat Masvidal twice. He wasn't even a true contender. He wasn't a true contender when he was, you know, no one was saying that when he was knocking everybody out, baptizing everybody, doing all this stuff, and everyone was on the Masvidal train. I've been a Masvidal fan since the Tobey and Modified, since the Backyard days, for the Kimbo Slice days. So for people to now discredit it, it's kind of a slap in the face. GSP was a dominant in terms of a 50-45, but in terms of finishes, how do you not give it to Usman? Very dominant. I don't think it's really even a discussion, right? I mean, like I said, I feel like we're comparing two different things. The only thing that's the same is the weight classes. The era is completely different. One was guys that were still coming in just being a straight up Muay Thai fighter like Thiago Alves, not really evolved. He's probably a lot more evolved now, but it's past his prime years, his prime years of competing when he fought GSP, primarily just a Muay Thai fighter and a little bit of BJJ. You could say if he's just BJJ, but his fights, he pretty much only did Muay Thai stand up. So, I don't know. I for me, right now, the Mount Rushmore, GSP's up there. Pioneer, father of the sport, okay. But the guy today who seems like he is unstoppable and is going to be on the top for this division for a while, unless maybe Khamzat Chimaev can make a run and get past these other guys, and we can see about that in terms of the grappling and the striking, that's a completely different ballgame. But he's not there yet. But for now, Usman's that dude. I don't see how can anyone even dispute that. Next up, we have Rose Namajunas, Weili Zhang. Wow. People were asking me about my picks. I just felt like Zhang had the power because she was able to handily take care of Jessica Andrade. This is why styles make fights. You can't do MMA math. I was like, Rose can win. I feel like the only way she can win was that she could take her down and get her back, which might be tough. She shut me up. I think she shut up a lot of people. The same way Usman shut up a lot of people. They thought he was going to get humped. They were going to be a crotch sniffer for the entire fight. Put the nail in the coffin. They thought Rose Namajunas needed a takedown. She put the nail in the coffin with strikes. Both these fighters with strikes. Impressive performances. Rose Namajunas coming through with that thug, that I don't even want to call it thug jitsu, but that Rose jitsu, just that swag, that elegance, that desire, and that just... She's an animal. She is an animal. It's crazy, man. This sport is fascinating. It fascinates me every single time I watch a fight card, especially of the highest calibers like these guys who are fighting for world titles at the pinnacle of the sport, you know? So, shout out to Rose, man. Make sure my mic's not... I felt like... Oh, that was just my stereo strips. Shout out to Rose, though. She did a thing. She went out there and dominated... Those inside leg kicks, you can see Weili sliding back, which I call a hollow out, and her hands are kind of open. It's not super tight where she can like get caught on the hand. They came out a little bit. As she hollowed out the leg, she brings the lead leg in, slides out to Gallo the way of that inside leg kick. As she does that, she's kind of looking down for a brief second, kind of like in that halfway point. Maybe she's watching the hips. And then that foot comes around inside the guard. Switch kick. And it was the quickest, like, switch kick, snap kick that I don't even know which one it was. It was definitely a switch kick because she definitely shuffled her feet to get inside. But then it was kind of like a snap where it was just like that foot just flicked up the middle and just tapped her right on the chin, put her down, and she just bum rushed her. And after that, she just put the nail in the coffin again. And for Rose to do this for the second time, upset the odds and beat up someone who people thought was going to be dethrone someone who people thought were going to be on the top for a very long time. And this is why I said, like, I tweeted, the thing I love about sports, especially combat sports, is you have the opportunity to write your own movie. You write the script to your own movie. I don't know what's cooler than that. You write the script in your own movie in terms of good, bad, and everything in between. And for Rose Namajunas to come out and do this again, she's the first female fighter to ever reclaim her title after losing. So they said for the stats, female champion, loser title, come back and reclaim it. Second person, I think the way she won it, you know, she knocked out Joanna Jędrzejczyk and then knocks out, and I think both were in the first round, if I'm not mistaken, which is pretty crazy, man. It's I think she has to go down as one of the greatest of all time in terms of the female division, right? I mean, you could talk about the dominance of Amanda Nunes and everything, but there's something special about coming back from adversity. And you look at her two Jessica Andrade fights, stylistically, it just seems like people with big, big power who are bulldogs just give her trouble. But we now know that she can knock you out as good as she can submit you or even outpoint people, you know? So I don't know. Rose is a badass. And like Pat Barry, her husband, said, who's the best in the world? I am. Who's the best in the world? I am. That I felt that. I felt that in my left titty. And yo, like I said, man, she's writing her own script to her own movie, and hate it or love it. I think she's going to be around for a little bit longer, and hopefully, you know, I'd like to see her and Pat Barry have some babies soon. Rose, whenever you guys ready, I know Pat Barry can wait, but you guys deserve it, man. You guys deserve some time off, and that's a whole nother story. I'm not going to get down that rabbit hole, but, you know, she's getting up there in that age is pretty much what I was getting at, but I don't think so. Let me actually check to make sure I'm not talking out my ass. She's 28. Oh, she's got time. Never mind. Continue your dominance, continue your run. And before you hang it up, obviously, or when you hang it up, you could decide to do that. You know, because what else is there for her to do? Just collect more paychecks and just keep adding to her legacy, I think. Eventually, I don't know who's going to be next. Maybe they have that rematch. Or if that other Chinese girl wins, I just saw at the UFCPI, she wins. I could see them having that matchup, giving China another attempt at winning a belt for another potential champion. I think her name is Zhan or Yan. So that should be a good fight. And yeah. This is why I don't bet on fights, man, because even I always bet on the people I like. And I did my odds picks and everything, and I just felt like on paper, Wei Li just had more stats in her favor. But again, man, you can't account for people who are doing their homework, who are just more focused and are just more dialed in. I'm not saying Zhang Wei Li wasn't, but those are factors that you cannot measure. So it's like, how can you bet on the unknown? Because it's a fight. It is a fist fight. GSP said something in his podcast with the latest podcast he did with Joe Rogan, saying like the one fight where fight week he had the most peaceful sleep and everything leading up to the fight was his fight against Matt Sauer, the first one. Which is the fight he got knocked out. And I can relate to that because that is the first time I felt comfortable going into a fight with no jitters and felt like I slept pretty well. The only thing that was hard was the weight cut, but everything else before that was like, yo, I'm going to smash this guy. And then I end up sleeping on the canvas, waking up in a hospital, coming to in a hospital. I woke up before that, but I came to in a hospital where my cobwebs and everything and my delusion was, my wits were about me, you know? So I can relate to that. I know exactly what he's talking about. I know exactly what he means. And it's just such a weird thing to say, because you almost feel like you're discrediting the other person's work But that is the fight game. It's everything. It's the work you put in beforehand, how you show up on fight day. If you show up on fight day and you've done everything right, but you show up and you do not, you're not there physically, mentally, I don't care what you did all training camp. If you're not there mentally, you're not going to perform. And that's just facts. So I can completely understand and relate to that. And I know exactly what he's talking about. So, yeah, again, the same thing with Rose. Namajunas dialed in and she got the job done, man. Beautiful. Like I said, that inside kick. She kept feeding that inside leg kick and then eventually came up top. And almost like Rose looked down for a slight second and then she came back up. So it looked like she sold that inside leg kick for Zhang. And then she tried to get out of the way. And sometimes you zig when you should have zagged, and that's the fight. Shevchenko versus Jessica Andrade, super dominant crucifix finish. Man, these fights are so good. I could go on about this for days. I wish I did have a partner here right now. Pumi actually is on his way back to the house. I got PT in a bit. So I would have waited, but I got to get my day going. My fiance gets in later tonight. Bam chicken, wham, wham. That just me. I was having a good time. She's got to get ready for her finals this week. She's finishing up. I think she's got one more final test tomorrow for her nursing program, 2-year program, and she needs to ace it. So let's give her some positive energy. Hoosah. Oh yeah, this podcast, guys, brought to you by Sleepy Bear. Go check these guys out. Use my Funk Master discount code, Funk Master. I just gave it away in the sentence. Funk Master discount code, SleepyBearGummies.com. Go check them out, and I'll have the link in the bio. So make sure you go check that out. Go get you some. This has CBD plus melatonin. Sleep right, sleep tight. Okay, so Valentina Shevchenko versus Jessica Andrade. Great fight. I thought this was also that the beauty of deception, where it's, oh, she can beat me. She says she can beat me with the grappling. And then you think Shevchenko is just going to strike the whole time. And then she comes through. She says, nah, fam. You talking all that smoke? You say you're going to take me down and elbow my face? Nah, fam, I'm about to show you what it is. She took her down multiple times. Big body earthed her. Boom. That's what we call earth back in the days when we were in elementary school and be like, yo, I'm going to earth you. Shut up. With your high-pitched voice. Shut up, I'm going to earth you. I'm going to earth you. What? I'm going to earth you like the rock. I'm about to put you in the ground and the dirt. And I'm going to earth you. And yeah, that's how we trash talk back in the days when I was growing up in Roosevelt. Good thing my voice has changed a little bit and actually developed. So she earthed her multiple times, put her in the dirt, put her in the canvas. As we call it, wrestling, we would say, put them in the basement. So when you pick somebody up and you really slam their ass through the mat really, really hard. So you put them in the basement. And that's what she did. She put her in the basement multiple times. Last time she transitions into side control and it steps into the crucifix position, which is devastating. When you can get that position in a fight a la John Jones versus Vladimir Matyushenko, dude, that's one of the worst positions. That's probably the only, I can't think of any other position. Mount, I'm okay with mount. I know how to cover, I know how to protect myself, I know how to hip ice, I know how to hit a oompa, I know how to fight the knees, take a little bit of damage, and hit, scrape the ankle, pull it over, get my underhook, get to my side, and then reclaim guard, or get back to my single leg, get back to my feet. But when you're in crucifix, nah, dog. That position and the judo position where you're sitting out into a headlock, those two positions are two of the worst, most uncomfortable positions I've ever been in a grappling situations. So much to the point where I would do anything to ever avoid being in those positions ever in a fight. Same thing with this fight right here. Shevchenko transitions into that side control. Beautiful transition. Her jiu-jitsu just looked on point. Her grappling just looked on point. And the striking was on point too. Tagging her when she could tag her. And every time she came in, tried to press her up against the cage, she couldn't. She was the one landing the knees. She was the one controlling the positions. And when Jessica Andrade tried to lift her and she could not, that's when I said, all right, this fight is about to get ugly. And she earthed her one more time. After that, transitioned, elbow galore, and it was kind of like the Chukagian fight, and I think she finished her in the crucifix, the Chukagian fight as well with the crucifix position, if I remember correctly. Yes, so she's got two finishes in round three with Chukagian, finished ground and pound, and then she got elbows from the crucifix position in round two against Jessica Andrade, super dominant. There's nothing more you can say. Champion. Now, Uriah Hall versus Chris Weidman, we all seen how that went 17 seconds into the first round. Big rematch. This would have been a fun fight. Both guys looked like they were in phenomenal shape. And not much happened. A lot of circling, a lot of feeling out, a lot of solid feints from Chris, trying to get Uriah Hall to bite. That was the kick. No real setup, but it's weird because people say set up the kick next time. And it's like, how often do people just spam a hard leg kick in the first round? Because it's the first kick and the guy can't really gauge his speed. And that happens. I'm going to say almost never. I'm going to say that never happened ever in the UFC. When has that ever happened in the first minute of a fight? The first kick. How many first kicks were thrown that were naked with no setups and other than feints and then just whacking a leg kick? And then that never happens. And then it's just a freak thing, man. And again, man, we were all here lost for words and kind of just zapped the energy out of the room because everybody was super pumped for the three title fights. Yeah, we had fun. We enjoyed watching it, but it was just like not knowing how our boy was doing, you know. So just one of those things, you know. And Uriah Hall says he owes him the rematch when he heals up if he wants it. So we'll see what happens. So Chris is going to be out for a while and I think a year minimum. Obviously, it's just a fracture, so they put it back together. And once they do, I think the bone takes like 6 to 8 weeks to fully heal. And then from there, I don't know if they're going to put a rod in his leg. I know he was in the hospital today. Marie made a post, like I said, earlier in the beginning of the podcast. So we'll see what happens with that. Why am I saying condolences? But let's, you know, prayers up for Chris, and hopefully he can make a speedy recovery. And we can get to see a fun matchup between those two guys again. And hopefully we can get some clarity and end it that way. This next one, pretty weird as well. First round, stoppage at the end of the first round. One kick from Anthony Smith, who was also one of my DraftKings bets. I did a parlay bet for DraftKings.com, the sports books. I did Anthony Smith and Randy Brown to win for plus 400. If you listen to me, you made some money. If you didn't, I'm sorry. People say Anthony, they said maybe Randy Brown, they said Anthony Smith, never. I said, I don't even get how you can dismiss the work that Anthony Smith has done. You could say he didn't look good, and his greatest claim to fame was the John Jones thing and going the distance with him. Yes and no. He's beat a lot of other high caliber guys. Alexander Gustafsson and I want to say Thiago Santos. No, he lost to Thiago Santos, but he beat Rashad Evans, Mauricio, Shogun Hua. He beat Ozdemir, he lost to John Jones, beat Gustafsson, lost to Glover, lost to Rackage, and now he's on a 2-fight win streak. So it's good. I forgot I got the monitor right here that I'm looking at right now. So yeah, to discredit him and all the work he's done, I think it's kind of silly. The guy's been in there with the toughest guys. Jimmy Crew, this was his first big test, and obviously there's nothing he could do about getting the dead leg, the dead foot, perineal nerve, drop foot, whatever you want to call it. But it's just one of those things where Smith threw the kick, the same thing with O'Malley, and Jimmy Crew can still consider himself he could be like he's mentally undefeated like Sean O'Malley if he wants, but just joking. Obviously I like Crew, he seems like a very, very nice guy, but I did think this was going to be a little bit too much too soon. And I'm not saying that the fight was going Smith's way. It was pretty even. Smith was taking his time, being very calculated, being very cautious of how he was stepping in with his jab and utilizing his kicks. And he threw that one kick and just landed right on the money. And I made a tweet saying, like, why did they stop it? They let O'Malley bounce around on one foot going from the second to the third round. If I remember correctly, he was hurt in the second round. And in the third round, he came out just hopping on one foot, if I remember correctly. Or it might have happened in the third round and they didn't stop it. So it's just like, if the guy is allowed to hop around, why wouldn't they allow him to hop around or even just keep it very, very light and lightly step where he can? And if he wants to pull guard, he could pull guard. To at least give him an opportunity to choose, like, hey, man, I'm going to take the L, or I'm going to try to fight through it and find a different way, path to victory. If I can get on top, if I can drag out the takedown, stall the fight against the cage. I don't know. I'm not saying it would have gone his way. I'm just saying in a situation like that, if I had a, let's say, drop elbow or my hand was really numb. You've seen guys who had broken arms and they continue to fight and they still punch with it. They got broken hands. They still punch with it. So it's like, if we know it's broken, they don't stop the fight. What's the difference? And I know people say, well, it doesn't carry the majority weight of your body. These are all fair and valid points, but I'm just like, you should leave that up to the fighter to decide, because it wasn't broken. It just, he couldn't really step. And the nerve pain ended, I should say, and he got the feeling in his foot back shortly after. I don't know for exactly how long, but he did get it back later that night from what I heard from the UFC broadcast talking about it. So in regards to that, that's all I was saying in terms of him being able to continue to fight. Not again, he wasn't going to win at being that compromised against a veteran who's that savvy like Anthony Smith. But it was one of those things where, I don't know, I feel like you got to let the guy fight. Right? I don't know. So it is what it is. Jimmy Crute will be back. He's still super young. He'll get a chance to redeem himself and get back in the win column. Yeah, because what is he? I'm seeing right now he is 25 years young. So he's good, man. And then this other one, Randy Brown versus Alex Oliveira. This was a fun fight as well. For as long as it lasted, first round, rear naked choke, one-handed at that. Randy Brown, big man, shot up. Gets the submission. The first round, Alex Oliveira was doing what Alex Oliveira does, that darting in, that bouncing style where you just don't know when he's going to come in and explode. And it looked like he was having a little bit of success with it, but eventually Randy Brown was able to tie him up, get him against the cage, and once he dragged him down, finished the fight. And it was just one of those things where you're in a tough position. He could have kept fighting the hands, but he had the wrist on the far side, so he couldn't really fight the hands with that hand. But this hand tried to look him in the face, and I know it's easier said than done. Randy Brown has super long arms. I've been in his ninja choke before, and I was like, wow, those long ass arms, there's really no space to escape once that thing is around your neck. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. He had one hand around the neck and he was able to get the choke, continue with the pressure. People think you need both hands to finish. You don't. As long as you're around the carotid on both sides, sometimes even one. If you put enough pressure on one carotid, you could put a guy to sleep as long as you compress it the right way. Eventually, you shorten the amount of air getting or oxygen and blood going to the head and you put that person out. So shout out to Randy Brown for getting the dub. And I think this now puts him at a 3-fight win streak. Let me double check. No, just one. His last one was Vicente Luque back in 2020 in August. So back in the win column. And shout out to him for dropping that good plug with the post-fight interview. Go check out his Twitch. And someone was hating on him saying like, that marred the performance, him instead of him doing an interview and answering questions that the fans wanted to hear. I'm like, how do you even know what the fans wanted to hear? That he was just, he asked a question. Like, there's not a poll that says like, this is what the fans want to hear. Not that I know, there's no poll where the commentators ask the fans what questions do they have for the fighters. I guess there was a little dust up between the two of them and a little back and forth. And then Randy Brown got up and pretty much just like, done your blood clot, yeah. So it is what it is. Dwight Grant, I just think people get a little too... Don't get so entitled, man. We're still people, man. Like, this is our one platform to push ourselves and elevate ourselves in things that we're doing outside of fighting. So let the man sell what he wants to sell. If he wants to push something that's of him, of his brand, if you give that much of if you care that much, just go check it out. That's it. If you don't care that much, then freaking just go about your business, man. Just like, I don't know, man. People complain about anything, dude. Anything. It's so bizarre. But it is what it is. He got the dub, and yeah. This next one, Dwight Grant versus Stefan Sekulic. This was a close fight, man. I didn't know who was winning. I was cracking some jokes on Grant's haircut, and I was like, dude, yo, DC, what are you guys doing with my mans over there? This is your representation of Brooklyn over there? Come on. Tighten that thing up. Let's get that fade nice and tight. But he got the dub, split decision, very, very close fight. Now, Brendan Allen versus Carl Roberson. This was a crazy one because Roberson is the one that decided to initiate the leg lock, the footsie games. And once you start playing footsie, man, you never know what the heck is going to happen. And sure enough, Brendan Allen was the better BJJ guy. He was taken down. He was trying to create something at the end of the round. It was only like, how much time? I can't read the small letters. 5 seconds left in the first round. Had an opportunity to just ride it out, but decided to continue to go, continue the transition. It's like, yo, I'm going to do something dope right now. I'm going to attack this man's legs with an ashi. Goes for it. And instead of him getting the heel hook, he got heel hooked. And it's just one of those things, man. Whoever gets the ankle first, I always say is usually the guy that gets the best bite. So if the first guy gets a good bite and then you're trying to re-bite, I always address the hands first. I'm going to address the hands, attack it, get my knee out and into a safe position before I allow you to manipulate it where you can get that heel in the crook of your bicep and your forearm and get a good bite. And once you get that good bite and you can lock and go palm to palm, and then you start to hip pressure. So you drive your hip through as you pull up. So you drive your hip through and that put pressure on the knee. So depending on how you have that heel hook, that's gonna get the pressure on the knee joint, and that's where the submission comes from, because you're not attacking necessarily the ankle. It's not an ankle lock. You're putting pressure on the knee, which can tear everything in there. So knowing when to tap is a good thing. And hopefully Robertson's knee is not beat up. CFC's champions, Pat Sabatini, gets the dub. I gave him a nice little shout out. He fought one of my teammates, James Gonzalez, and James was the one that submitted him, BJJ Black Belt, with the, he calls a modified Frank Mir lock, when you wrench the elbow, and he pretty much destroyed everything from like the shoulder down where it was dangling. I guess it was just hyperextended, and he was able to get everything back into the socket and back into place, and he was able to train like 2 weeks later. Congrats to him on that, because that thing looked bad. And fortunate for him, he had another shot, got to the UFC. James took another fight, and the guy missed weight by like, I want to say it was 5 pounds. He took it anyway, and he ended up losing a close fight. And that last 5 pounds, man, the guy didn't kill himself. He didn't even try. And from there, I thought that was pretty scummy. And for me, I don't even think I would have even taken a fight, because it's just like, dude, I had to kill myself to get down here, because James is a big guy. He's like me cutting down to 135. And to let a guy still get in there with you who missed by 5 pounds, I don't know, man. I don't know if the juice is worth the squeeze in this one, you know. So it was just one of those situations. I don't know what James's situation was. Maybe he felt like he could still win. Maybe he felt like he needed the money. There's many reasons, you know, and I don't like to ask, even teammates, I don't like to ask about personal business and stuff like that. But back to Pat Sabatini, he got the dub. In his bounce back fight, got the KO, I think it was, over another tough dude. I think it was Jordan Totoni, who I got to train with back in 2017 when I was getting ready for Rafael Sunsal when I came out to Factory X. But he looked great, man. Neutralized all the positions of Connolly. Connolly fought at 170 and he came down to 145. She took it on short notice, fought Michel Pereira, beat him in a very, very close fight, but beat him. You would think he would have just been I thought he was a 55er, but then he comes down and fights at 145, which I thought was pretty wild. Now I have to wonder, like, what weight was he fighting at beforehand? Because it's pretty freaking impressive. He said 55. The last guy he fought, what's this guy's name? Juwan Owens. Fought that guy, fought Parati, Joey Parati. I believe this one, this guy was a middleweight. Yo, Jesus, jeez Louise. I don't even know what weight this guy fights at anymore. I don't know if there's any way for me to check. I'm scrolling down right now. Let me take this look. Tapology page I'm on. Despite light, okay, RFC lightweight championship, and this was against Owens. So I don't know, man. Sometimes I think when you cut too much weight and you get down to a smaller weight class, you lose something. And in this situation, I felt like he had the size, but he didn't have the speed that I thought Pat Sabatini had a bit over him, where he was able to connect a little bit better at the striking. Connolly was doing a good job of measuring the distance with the jab, but anytime Pat would throw something at him, it looked very, he looked uncomfortable on the receiving end of the strikes defensively, and that allowed Pat Sabatini to get inside, eventually take him down, and once he got on his back, pretty much just rolled him out the entire time. So very dominant decision for Pat Sabatini in his UFC debut, and a solid win for him to, fighting a guy like Tristan Connolly, who beat a guy that fought at 170. And sometimes, obviously, people were talking trash and saying like he was playing around, he was exhausted before he even got in the fight. I'm like, yeah, that's all true. The same way I didn't eat the day of my fight with Jan, but I still was starting to lose the fight and still getting very, very tired from the very first bell. So the fight is the fight. The day you show up is on that day and that time. Any place, anywhere, anytime. It's that place, that day, that time. Barring all excuses. Because no matter what you say, everything is technically an excuse. Right or wrong. So, that's just the way I look at it. And your excuses can be valid. But at the end of the day, you signed the contract to show up at that day, that time. And if you didn't perform or don't fill up to your potential, guess what? It's that day, that place, that time. And sometimes that's just how the game goes, man. This is why I always say, like, guys like a GSP, guys like a Khabib, Nurmagomedov, who can perform day after day, or should I say night after night, and have performances like that where they just never seem to have an off day. Or they just never seem to have a day where they didn't feel that great. And if they did, and they could still perform and still be undefeated or still have a run like that, come on, man, what are we talking about? Like, everyone has their things or situations that they're dealing with. And if you could perform despite all those things, those situations, you're a special human being. You're in a percentage bracket. You're in the elite of the elite. You know, so I think something should be said about that, and some respect should be put for the guys who can do that. And again, maybe something was up with this situation, this fight, but you talk about take discrediting Connelly for beating Pacheco. Yeah, listen, man, he did that. At the end of the day, Connelly showed up, he did his job, and he won the fight. You can say whatever you want to say. You can say over a rematch would be different. Every fight's different. So, yeah, a rematch would be different. And maybe he still loses. Maybe he still loses. Who knows? But it is what it is. Congrats to Pat Sabatini. Danai Badgrail, great fight over Kevin on Natividad. Natividad looked great with his feints and everything. He looked super explosive, hard to time. But I trained with Badgrail when I hurt my neck from Gustavo. I came down to the sparring class at Extreme Couture. He was down there. Now, I was only supposed to box. I was only supposed to drill. I ended up saying, you know what? I'm going to try to just box and just work my hands. Not going to wrestle because I don't want to put my head in a situation where it's going to get cranked or people going for guillotines. I don't need that. And with the boxing, I will say his timing was legit, like probably one of the best that I'm saying in terms of like keeping his eyes wide open the entire time. You throw something at him, he's slipping, he's coming inside, like he'll get caught, but his eyes are still wide open as he eats the punch and comes back and throws a combination. Now, he wasn't going super hard with me, but at the same time, he was being very, very accurate and very, very precise, where I was like, yeah, maybe this is a guy that if I fought, I would definitely have to grapple him a little bit, because if I can mix it up, it'll give me a lot more success with my striking, you know. So unfortunately, we didn't get to work out the way I wanted to. It was like in a cage and all that, but it is one of those things. And I knew he was a tough dude, Mongolian guy, gets a knockdown the first round, and I gave him a nice congratulations on Twitter. And just that, man, I like working with different people because I think it gives you a great look and assessment of your skill set and keeps you honest on who's really out there and what you need to do to get better. Because like I said, his timing was perfect. These other fights were good, but we're not going to get too crazy into that. Vargas got the win over Wrong. And the one girl who made the debut, Liang, who they were really, really pumping up, she came up short. And these were all the teams from the Team Shanghai. And Jeff Molina at 125, he beat Qulang. In a banger of a fight, Qulang looked so much bigger than him, and Jeff Molina just did his thing, man. There was a couple moments where I was like, he's getting a little too trigger happy, where he's hanging out in the pocket too long, longer than he needs to. But again, just volume. And people were saying the pity pat punches don't hurt. I'm like, people are so dumb. They sit behind a computer and they think they just know, or sit behind their phones, they think they just know if they never even train, and they think they just know. Like, if you don't train, how can you even know what you're talking about? Experience is everything. You think I'm fighting Peter Yan throwing these pitter patter punches for no reason? I know I'm touching him up, and I know I'm chipping away. I'm getting up on the scorecards. I'm doing damage, and I'm letting him get flustered because now he's thinking, oh, I gotta do something back. And even in that first round, my assessment of that first round was, dude, I was doing everything I wanted in the playbook, where I had to stop and go like, is this guy even fighting me back, where I'm flicking the jab and then he bangs me with that right cross? And it's just one of those things. And then he dropped me. Yeah, he did drop me, but the volume and whatever. So going back to Jeff Molina, him keeping the volume, like Oria landed the big shot, but then I'm like, yeah, but can that one big shot take away from all the things that this guy was doing? He was piecing this dude up, and I thought it was the right decision. He got the win, and I thought he looked better. I thought he looked like the better, more complete fighter, and looked like he was the one imposing his will. And in a fist fight, I thought he won the fight. You know, so I thought he looked good, and it's just one of those things, man. So I said I wasn't going to go too crazy in depth with that, but that was a great fight for the flyweight division. These guys are banging, and I did put out a tweet with Pumi saying, yo, these guys ain't got nothing on you. And it's because of the technical prowess that Pumi possesses, where he's not in there having those slugfests. He's in there touching you up and he's getting out, or he's in there touching you up and he's putting you down. That's just the way we roll over here, you know? So it's just one of those things. I'm super excited for the fights this weekend because we got our guy Marab fighting. And I'm going to do a separate podcast on that because I'm going to get this one edited and get it up and get ready for my PT session. So remember, guys, this podcast is brought to you guys by SleepyBearGummies.com. Just check these guys out. The Sleepy Bear, only the coolest bear on the block with the chain on to match your boy, Aljamain, the Funk Master Sterling, baby. Boom, boom, boom. And obviously, powered by Everlast as well. So thank you guys for always tuning in. Stay safe. If you have any questions, drop them in the comment box. If you want to drop clown emojis, drop those in the comment box as well. Don't forget to hit the like button. And if you could share it. I'll see you guys later. Thanks for always tuning in. And
that's the show.
Stay safe.
You ain't got to go home, but you got to get to stepping. And remember, we bring the noise because the people want the funk. Until next time, this is the Weekly Scraps. Bye-bye.